Rafe heard a muffled thump on the carpet of the front hall and glanced up from the jigsaw puzzle he was working on. "What's that, Mary?" His wife's shuffling footsteps receded, then approached, and she appeared in the doorway of his study, her chubby fingers closed around a thick manila envelope. "It's for you," she said, stepping into the room, reluctantly, and holding it out to him. He took it and waited for Mary to leave, but she just stood there, her round face shining. Rafe sighed inwardly and inspected the outside of the envelope. There was no return address, but it was postmarked from the city. Sliding a fingernail under the sealed flap, he tore a great gash in the top, then pried the envelope open and peered into the dark interior. "What is it?" Mary's eyes were piggish and glistening. "Stack of papers, looks like." Rafe tipped the package to one side, letting the loose pile fall into his hand. The second he had registered the contents of the top page, he felt the blood freezing in his veins. The shock seemed to last an eternity, but finally, aware of Mary's curious gaze, he replaced the stack in the envelope, fighting to keep his expression neutral. "It's nothing," he said, his throat so dry he nearly coughed the words. She was still looking at him. "It's just insurance stuff, you know," he added lamely. "Huh." Mary looked down at the envelope in his hands, then back up at his face. Without a word, she turned and disappeared down the hall. He heard dishes banging around in the kitchen a few seconds later. Rafe let out a long, slow breath, dropping the envelope on top of the half-finished puzzle on his desk. He scrubbed at his unshaven cheeks with both hands. "What if I hadn't been here?" he thought. "What if she had opened it?" He tried to calm his racing heart and nearly succeeded. The fact was that he had been here, and Mary hadn't opened the envelope, and he was getting all worked up over nothing. Besides, he told himself, even if she had opened it, she probably wouldn't have understood the significance of what was inside. He sat down at his desk again, moving the envelope aside for a moment so he could study the puzzle once more and try to regain his focus. Rafe was keen on puzzles, and he particularly liked this one. He'd bought it online, one of a specialty series called Predators and Prey. It depicted a wolf captured in midair, preparing to sink its outstretched claws into the flank of a running elk. Rafe had worked a few of the other puzzles in the series. One pictured a crocodile taking down a wildebeest, one a lioness sinking her teeth into the jugular of a gazelle, and one a great white tearing a seal in half. These three were already framed and hanging over the mantel. Putting the puzzles together gave him a great, if not entirely understood, satisfaction. He felt as though he was building nature, establishing the relationships between its creatures, playing God in a sense. He had always identified himself with the predators in the pictures, of course, sleek and deadly and captivating. He glanced over at the envelope he'd just received. Its arrival made him feel more and more in the position of the prey, the elk, the gazelle, the seal, the wildebeest. It was a position he didn't care to be in. Rafe got abruptly to his feet, snatching his car keys from the peg on the wall behind him. He leaned out into the hallway. "I have to run to the store, Mary. Do you need anything?" There was a long silence, and Rafe thought she wasn't going to answer him, the moody bitch. But then her voice floated down the hall. "Maybe a gallon of milk, and some of those rolls like we had. Don't be long, dinner's almost ready." "I'll be as long as I please, and as long as it takes," Rafe thought, smoothing his hand across the wolf's proud laminated head. He picked the envelope up, feeling as though it weighed several pounds more than it had when he'd first handled it, then secured it inside his jacket, pulling the zipper up until the bulging brown paper was completely concealed. Keys jangling from his fist, Rafe made his way toward the front door and sidled out into the dusk. He drove to a rundown motel on the outskirts of town and parked in a space at the back of one of the buildings, in between the glow from the flickering streetlights. There was no one around that he could see, but his skin still crawled with a sensation of being watched. With a trembling hand, he reached up and flicked on the dome light. The envelope sat on the passenger seat, its contours innocuous. He noticed now that the handwriting on the front was formal, almost fussy, the letters decorated with unneeded swirls and flourishes. Rafe imagined someone, whether man or woman he couldn't determine, sitting at a desk very like his own, perhaps with an equally precious quill pen gripped between his or her fingers, copying his address onto the envelope. Who was this person? How did he know where Rafe lived or even know his name? Rafe's head was beginning to pound, and he wished he had stopped for a couple of aspirin on his way out of the house. He considered driving to a convenience store to buy some, but then he realized he was simply putting off the inevitable. He drew in a very long breath through his nose, then exhaled through his mouth. He snatched up the envelope in both hands and slid out the papers, all in one thoughtless motion. The image on top, the one that had so startled him before, showed a woman, or what had once been a woman. Her naked body had been torn into four roughly equal pieces that swam in a pool of spreading blood, shredded clothing, and flesh. The photograph was black and white, so the blood looked more like tar. Rafe's heart rate was soaring again, and he paused to contain it. He held the photo up to the light to examine it more closely. Just between the woman's clavicles, in the pale skin where the neck met the chest, was a dark smear that bore a more deliberate shape than a bloodstain. Rafe stared at it, knowing what it was, yet compelled to investigate further. His emotions were a confusing tangle of guilt, of arousal, of fear at being found out, and of something else, something that felt almost like pride. He brought the photo even closer to his face. The mark was a brand, seared into the woman's flesh. The skin was blackened and bubbled around the edges. The shape was that of an animal's paw print, a pad and four toes with long, sharp claws. Rafe almost smiled as he looked at it, but then he stopped himself, suddenly peering out of the car windows into the dimness, the feeling of being observed almost unbearable. He squinted, but again he saw no one. Only mildly comforted, Rafe flipped through the rest of the pile, which were all similarly themed black and white photographs. He paused to consider each one, briefly, remembering. Every photo depicted a woman in a differing state of mutilation. Some were torn apart, as the first woman was. Some were disemboweled. Some merely missing limbs or heads. All lay situated in outdoor wooded areas, leaned against trees or peeking out of shrubbery. All bore the exact same brand of the animal's paw. Rafe's trembling had increased as he progressed through the stack, which numbered about 50 images. At first, he thought a member of the police department must have sent them, because some of them were similar to the crime scene photos that had turned up in the newspapers. But other pictures portrayed victims that were still undiscovered, and that fact pointed to something else: blackmail. Rafe's suspicions were heightened by the piece of paper hidden at the bottom of the pile of photos. In the same frilly handwriting that graced the envelope, another address had been written across a clean sheet of cream-colored vellum. There was no name, but the address was in the city, quite nearby, on a street that Rafe had driven down a few times. Suddenly, his fear and paranoia boiled over into rage, and he crumpled the paper in his fist, which he then banged on the dashboard repeatedly. Someone had been following him. Someone knew everything, even the location of the bodies the police hadn't found out about yet. And now this someone clearly wanted Rafe to come to him to make some sort of arrangement. His fist had started to hurt, and he let it drop into his lap. Rafe's eyes narrowed. Yes, he could certainly arrange something, he thought. He could even make this clever blackmailer the star of one of the photographs he seemed to like so much. Rafe almost smiled again, but then his brow furrowed. What if he was being set up? It would be immensely stupid to waltz right into the blackmailer's lair, where cops or worse could be lying in wait for him. Then again, if he didn't go, then the blackmailer would surely send the photos and his address to the cops anyway. The pounding in Rafe's head grew more intense, threatening to blot out rational thought altogether. He tossed the pictures back in the envelope and threw the package back onto the passenger seat, pinching the bridge of his nose with one hand. The paper with the blackmailer's address was still clutched in his fist, and when the pain subsided enough so that he could see clearly again, he pulled it out and unscrewed it, smoothing it against the steering wheel. He felt pinned, like a dead butterfly to a board. Whatever he did, he was going to be the prey, the weakling, and being weak was something he never allowed himself. He would have to think hard, find some way of gaining an advantage. Staring down at the address on the paper, he committed every last black scrawl to memory, then folded the page calmly and inserted it back into the envelope. Mary would be wondering where he was, and he still had to stop at the store on the way back, so as not to arouse her suspicions further. Tonight, he would go home, eat dinner with his wife, pretend nothing was wrong. He would wait until Mary went to her bridge game after dinner, and then he would destroy the photos. After that, he would lie on his bed in the dark, listening to the tick of the clock and the thump and hum of the refrigerator, and he would think what he was going to do to make sure that he remained the predator in his present situation. And when tomorrow morning came, he would head straight for the address in the city, his head clear, his nerves composed. He would be sure to bring his branding iron along, just in case. Rafe had cruised up and down the street 5 times, and he still couldn't see the number of the building he was looking for. As he took another turn around the block, he began to panic. After all, he had destroyed the paper with the address, along with all the photographs. He'd burned them in the fireplace in his study, watching as the edges curled and disappeared as smoke up the flue. But he was sure he'd remembered the number correctly, and that damn number just wasn't here. He made another jerky U-turn and drove down the street again, going too fast at first, but then forcing himself to slow down and look harder. Luckily, it was a Sunday, and the streets between the high-rises were nearly deserted. Finally, on his 7th pass, he pulled the car hard to the curb, cursing and savagely scraping the gears as he shoved it into park. Someone was fucking with him, he realized, and when he found out who it was, he was going to make that person suffer more than anyone had ever suffered. For a moment, he lost himself in his revenge fantasy, picturing himself yanking out toenails with rusty pliers, inserting needles under eyelids. The images were so vivid he could almost see them through the sun-stained windshield, superimposed over the languid storefronts outside. At last, he shook his head, trying to dislodge the visions. This was definitely not helping. He stared out the windows a few more minutes, breathing hard and reading the numbers over and over to himself, finally giving up in frustration. Suddenly hungry, he lurched out of the car and headed for a hole-in-the-wall burger joint that was sending irresistible odors of frying meat into the rippling autumn air. Once inside, he ordered a large burger with everything and a strawberry milkshake, carrying his booty out into the street, letting it drip through the wax paper as he ate. When he had wolfed down the sandwich and slurped the last of the milkshake from the bottom of the styrofoam cup, he stuffed his trash into the barrel near the edge of the sidewalk, wiping the grease from his hands onto his jeans. The food had only served to make him angrier, more frustrated. The meat sat like a lead ball in his stomach. Rafe was heading back to the car, thinking he was just going to pack it all in, go home and hope for the best, when he saw something he hadn't noticed on any of his previous passes. It was a storefront, directly across the street from where he'd parked the car, really just a tiny narrow window and an even tinier door. He would have put money on the fact that it hadn't been there when he'd looked before. But then again, it was a small place, crammed in between a wig store that looked as though no one had entered it since the Beehive was still in style, and a specialty bakery with a window full of towering pink and white wedding cakes. The peeling numbers over the dust-coated door matched the address on the paper in the envelope. His hands curling into fists, Rafe began marching across the road, forgetting all the careful planning he'd done, forgetting the fact that he might be walking into a trap. He mounted the sidewalk on the opposite curb, leaning forward like a heat-seeking missile, his forehead cutting a path through the air. He grabbed the handle of the door of the little shop and shoved, barely hearing the pleasant little tinkle of the bell above the entrance. The blood in his veins felt hot, pulsing into every atom of his body. For a moment, he could see nothing. The shop was dark compared to the late morning sunshine outside. Rafe stopped and blinked a few times, getting his bearings, pricking up his ears for any sound of ambush. He heard nothing except for the echo of the bell over the door, and a slight scraping sound, like glass bottles being pushed together. "May I help you?" At the sound of the voice, Rafe froze, but then his vision resolved itself. The person who had spoken was across the room, standing behind a tall wooden counter that made him appear much shorter than he probably was. The man was fairly young, but with a face bearing the strong character of age. His skin was the color of coffee, and his abundant black hair was pulled back in a neat ponytail. He was looking up at Rafe with very large, nearly black eyes, and his expression was one of bemused expectation. Rafe pulled himself up to his full height, which was well over 6 feet, and advanced on the front counter. "You know who I am," he said in his most threatening growl. It wasn't exactly a question, nor was it a statement of fact. "What are you playing at?" Rafe glanced around the shop, as though looking for the accomplices he was certain must be hiding in the shadows. He hadn't noticed it until now, but the store looked like something out of the 19th century. The shelves lining the walls contained murky brown glass bottles with yellowed labels, their contents unidentifiable. There was an odd chemical tang in the air, something like musk and sulfur, with a hint of some exotic spice. What is this place? Can I get you anything? The man smoothly ignored Rafe's question, straightening up the bottles on the counter in front of him. To one side, there was also an old-fashioned scale, one that looked like the astrological symbol for Libra. Everything seemed covered with a thick layer of undisturbed dust. I've got some tea in the back if you'd like some. Rafe had not sat down and was still towering menacingly over the counter. I don't want any damn tea. I want to know what's going on here. Why did you send me those pictures? The man held up one hand. His fingers were oddly long and spindly. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. First things first. I know who you are, of course. Rafe G. Letourneau, known to police and the tabloid press as the Wolfman, or more commonly, the Jackal. Although you're not actually known to the police, are you, Mr. Letourneau? Not yet. You bastard, if you think you can blackmail me. The man shook his head, chuckling. No, you have things all wrong. Here, please sit down and I'll get some tea and we'll talk everything over. I'm sure we can come to a reasonable understanding. Rafe reached out and grabbed the man's arm, but he didn't even flinch. The muscles under his flesh felt like solid granite. Rafe let go, confused. Well, who are you then? The man's eyes glittered. I'm called Seka Mempet. Not that it's of any consequence at this juncture. Rafe snorted. What kind of name is that? Egyptian, actually. Now, if you'll excuse me for just a moment. The man slipped from behind the counter and through a wooden door, every move silent and graceful. Rafe had hardly registered his absence before the man returned, bearing a tray containing a silver teapot and two delicate china cups. The steam from the pot emitted the same spicy odor that Rafe had noticed earlier. It was a heady scent, pleasant and just the slightest bit sinister, making him feel as though he had ingested a very low dose of LSD. He shook his head, trying to clear it, and attempted to fasten back onto his rage. The attempt was only partially successful. Now then. Sekhem sat on an unseen stool behind the counter and began pouring the rich liquid into the cups. He set one in front of Rafe, then smiled again. His face was strong and handsome, but there was something strange about it that Rafe couldn't quite place. It scared him a little, though he was reluctant to admit as much. I did send you the pictures to get you to come here, that's true, Sekhem said, taking a sip of his tea. And I do know all about your activities of the past several years. I don't wish to disclose how I discovered your secret, but all of that doesn't matter. I'm aware that you think I brought you here to ask for money, but I assure you that is not my intention. In fact, he said, lowering his head to look around underneath the counter, I brought you here to give you something. What is it? Rafe instinctively reached for his pocket, where he usually kept a weapon of some sort, but then he remembered he'd left all his equipment in the car. Stupid. Just a moment. Sekhem was rummaging through what sounded like more glass bottles, mumbling to himself. Ah, here it is. He raised up with a small gold box, resting in his long-fingered hand. He set it on the counter and slid it across to Rafe. Don't open it until you get home, please. What's in there? Rafe had started to sweat, and the tea was making him feel drowsy. Well, you'll find out when you get home, won't you? Sekhem's black eyes considered him with something like amusement, or perhaps pity. Think of it as a second chance. Not many people get one of those. Rafe felt really bizarre now, almost as though he was floating outside of himself, watching the whole scene unfold from above. What are you talking about? Even his voice sounded far away, like the hum of a distant radio signal. Redemption, Mr. Letourneau, Sekhem said, and the words seemed to echo through Rafe's head as though through a massive canyon. The man smiled once again, his white teeth glowing in the gathering dimness, until the smile was all that remained, a Cheshire Cat grin hanging in the air before Rafe's face, growing larger and larger until it blotted out all other reality. Rafe started awake in his bed, pain screaming in his chest as though his heart had just attempted a brute force escape through his ribcage. Moonlight streamed across the sheets, and Mary was a snoring lump beside him, her face squashed against her pillow, one flaccid breast peeking from her tattered yellow nightgown. He waited until his nerves had ceased their jangling, and then he slid out from beneath the covers, wincing at the creaks of the bedsprings as he swung his legs over the side of the mattress. Mary stirred and turned away from him, but didn't awaken. Once he was out in the hallway with the bedroom door safely closed behind him, Rafe walked more normally, making his way down the stairs and through the kitchen, where he stopped to grab a beer from the fridge. The glowing blue numbers on the microwave read 4:36 a.m. Rafe drained half the beer bottle in one gulp, trying to dislodge the memory of that horrible dream he'd been having. He almost thought he could still see the full mouth of white teeth hanging in the air before him. And there were other things, too, weren't there? Things he'd seen just before waking up, shadows gathering in the corners of his vision. Even though he was fully awake now, he still felt disoriented. What day was it? Had he really gone downtown to look for that shop? Or had that all been part of the dream? The pictures had been real, hadn't they? Suddenly uncertain, Rafe carried his beer into the study, switching on the overhead light, which also caused the ceiling fan to wheeze into life, rustling some papers on his desk and dislodging the thin film of dust that had settled on his unfinished puzzle. Picking up the iron poker, he raked through the coals in the fireplace, not sure if he was hoping to find evidence of the photographs or find nothing, in which case he was seriously losing his mind. But no, there was a singed fragment of a manila envelope and a curled corner of what looked like photographic paper, so at least that much of the scenario had been no dream. Rafe drank another pull of his beer and then sat down heavily behind his desk. If the whole trip to the shop had been his imagination, then that still meant that he would have to deal with the problem, and after the dream, the idea seemed less than encouraging. He felt very tired suddenly, not like he wanted to go back to sleep because he knew he probably couldn't, but bone tired, exhausted, a feeling of being unable to continue with anything because it all seemed like too much trouble. Even the proud wolf on the desk before him seemed to be mocking him, daring him to finish what he had started. He put his hand to the edge of the puzzle, meaning to sweep it all off the desk in a dramatic fashion, but in the end, his hand simply dropped to his side. After a long moment of sitting thus, Rafe finally stirred. It occurred to him that the branding iron, the one with the animal paw, the one he'd made himself expressly for the purpose of making a mark on his prey, might not be in its usual place. He remembered putting it in the car this morning, before he had gone on his possibly imaginary errand. Had he really put it there? He couldn't start losing track of things like that. He'd always been so meticulous, so careful. That was one of the ways he'd prevented Mary from knowing anything for all these years. Reaching beneath the desk, Rafe slid aside a small false panel in the wood, tripping a switch that he'd installed himself. He opened the middle drawer and lifted out the piles of meaningless papers, revealing a secret compartment at the bottom. In the glow from the overhead light, he could clearly see that the branding iron was in its proper place, and he let out his breath. But then he noticed, pushed far back in the compartment, a glint of gold. Trembling, he reached inside. It was the box. He wasn't sure whether to be relieved or horrified, so he settled for an even mix of the two. His fingers skittered across the smooth surface of the box, feeling its scornful dimensions, before grabbing it and pulling it out into the light. As he brought it up to his face, he thought he caught a whiff of the scent from the shop, dust and spicy tea and sulfur. The silken, coffee-colored skin of Sekhem Pet shimmered in his mind's eye for a moment before vanishing into fragments. The box was light in his hand, small enough to sit comfortably in the palm. "Think of it as a second chance," he heard the mysterious man say, and for a second he almost thought the man was in the room with him, breathing down his neck. His skin crawled, but he refused to turn around to look. He hated himself for acting like a frightened child. With one savage movement, Rafe seized the top of the box and pulled it away, flinging it across the desk. He stared down at what was inside. Sitting there, on a bed of thin cotton, was a small white feather. Rafe almost laughed, sitting back in his desk chair and plucking the feather out of the box, turning it this way and that under the light. What the hell did this mean? The feather was as ordinary as could be, presumably taken from a dove or perhaps even a pigeon. Was this some foreigner's idea of a joke? If so, Rafe didn't get it. Disgusted, he dropped the feather back into the box, closed the lid, and tossed the whole affair back into the secret compartment of his drawer. Then he leaned his elbows on his desk, pressing his fingers to his temples. He certainly didn't need this bullshit, especially from someone who knew so much about him. If the guy was telling the truth that he didn't want money, then what exactly did he want, and how did he expect Rafe to be able to figure it out? He gnashed his teeth and sat up straight again. First thing in the morning, he was going right back to that shop downtown. If that creepy Egyptian bastard couldn't cough up a decent explanation, or even if he could, Rafe was going to fix him. The police would never find all the pieces. Smiling broadly, Ray flicked off the overhead light and headed back upstairs. He might be able to sleep a few more hours after all. Dawn had not quite broken when Rafe woke again, this time slowly, seeing the darkened bedroom coming into hazy focus around him. Mary was still sleeping, now splayed on her back, her mouth hanging crookedly open. A dream had not awakened Rafe this time, but something far more primal, something he recognized right away. Maybe it was the stress of receiving the pictures, the feeling of being in some predator's sights that triggered that familiar hunger, but whatever it was eating him alive. He slid out of bed again, feeling the urgency, knowing he'd have to work quickly before full daylight arrived. Grabbing a flannel shirt and jeans from the closet, he hurried downstairs and dressed in the kitchen, his heart hammering in his chest. Mary should sleep for at least another hour or two. She didn't have to go to work until 9. Rafe thought he'd have plenty of time to go out, satiate his need, come back here, grab a shower, and stop by Sekhem's shop before his own work shift started at 2. But he'd have to work fast. Forgoing breakfast or even a cup of coffee, Rafe slipped into his shoes, stopped in his office to retrieve his branding iron and a few other things, and went out, wincing at the roar his car made when it started up. The sky overhead was a medium purple, with pink fingers just starting to reach up from the horizon. At first he felt befuddled, unsure at where to find someone on such short notice, but then his predator instincts kicked in, erasing all uncertainty from his mind. He backed the car out of the driveway and headed east, his hands firm on the steering wheel. He only passed a few cars as he cruised toward town, his headlights cutting a swath in the grayish dimness before him. The sidewalks were nearly deserted, other than a pair of drunks supporting each other and giggling, and a burly man in a hard hat carrying a black lunchbox, heading for a rig parked in a vacant lot on the side of the road. Sensing prey might be near, Rafe slowed the car down to 30, letting his gaze rove from left to right. For a mile or two, he saw no one. But then, just down the street from a closed-up strip mall, he spotted a perfect catch. A slight woman in a nurse's uniform, sitting alone at a bus stop, her nose pressed against the morning paper. Rafe's veins thrummed beneath his skin, but he kept his cool, not wanting to alarm his potential victim. He pulled the car smoothly to the curb just ahead of the bus stop and turned off the engine. Moving slowly with a casual grace, he got out of the car and ambled toward the bus stop. "Excuse me," he said when he was still several yards away. "What time's the bus come?" He smiled, his hands stuffed in his pockets. The woman looked up and smiled back, somewhat distractedly. She glanced at her watch. "About 10 minutes, I guess." "Oh, I'm supposed to pick someone up." Rafe made no move toward the bench, remaining on the sidewalk a decent distance from her. She nodded and went back to her paper, and Rafe cheered inwardly, knowing she didn't see him as a threat. He kept his hands in his pockets, walking in little circles, looking at his feet, but all the time keeping his gaze on her, furtively. She was a nice-looking woman, a bit older than he liked, but still slim and pretty, with dark hair pulled back in a tight bun and a high, aristocratic forehead. He couldn't see much of her body underneath the scrubs, but her legs looked long, and the skin on her arms was firm and pale. After a few minutes, he made his way slowly toward her. "Say, do you happen to have a cigarette?" She looked up and smiled again, still unwary. "Sorry, I don't smoke." "I'm trying to quit myself." He moved closer, whistling through his teeth, as if it was the most natural thing in the world. He would have to strike soon before the bus rounded the corner. He couldn't take the chance that it might be early. Languidly, he leaned against the side of the bus shelter, his hands still in his pockets. "Going to be hot today," he said. "Yes." The woman was skimming the paper, apparently not listening to him. "Sure is." Rafe took one last long glance at the sky, and then he turned and was on her, moving so quickly that an observer would have seen nothing but a blur. His arms locked around her like an Iron Maiden, his big hand clamped over her mouth. "Don't struggle," he hissed in her ear. "I'm just going to take you for a little ride." She shook her head and pushed against him, but she was small, no match for his size or strength. He dragged her off the bench, almost carrying her, keeping her body pressed close to his, so that anyone passing would only see two lovers walking down the street in each other's arms. The newspaper fluttered to the sidewalk as he marched his prey toward the car parked at the curb. He shoved her into the passenger seat, where she immediately clawed for the door handle, looking for escape. "Stay where you are," Rafe said calmly. He had retrieved his revolver from beneath the driver's seat and was pointing it at her stomach. Her eyes grew very big, and Rafe could almost see the thoughts whirring around in her head, wondering if she could jump out the door before he could pull the trigger. He smiled at her, and the flurry in her eyes died down. She would be docile, like the good prey she was. He drove her toward the highway, where the buildings and housing developments thinned out somewhat. She begged and cried at first, offering him money, swearing not to report him. But after a while, she saw that he was not going to acknowledge her, and she quieted down. Her hands trembled in her lap. Rafe took his victim only a few miles, mindful of the time factor. He turned at an exit ramp off the highway, one that led only to a group of disused-looking gas stations and seedy motor lodges. Morning traffic had begun to pick up. Rafe kept to the speed limit, trying not to attract attention. One of the motels, a pink stucco affair with a sign so faded that Rafe couldn't read it, had only two cars in the parking lot. He steered toward it, then pulled around to the side of the building. There was a small copse of woods in the back, and as luck would have it, the chain-link fence that divided it from the motel's grounds looked loose. He waved the gun at the woman. "We're going to get out now. Don't make any noise or try to run." The woman did as she was told, and Rafe followed close behind her, casting a wary eye around to make sure no one was watching them from the windows. All the curtains in the motel rooms were drawn and still. He pushed her through a ragged slit in the fence, and he poked the gun in her ribs when she scratched her hand on the metal and whimpered. He came through after her, the chain link rattling, but hopefully not enough to awaken anyone nearby. He didn't take her far into the trees before forcing her to stop. "Take off your clothes," he ordered, and she did it, her face contorted in terror and shame. She was crying, but they were silent tears. Rafe was almost proud of her. She did have a nice body under the scrubs, taut and trim, and Rafe fell on her with animal abandon, forcing himself between her legs. She gasped, and he pressed the gun to her temple, reminding her to keep quiet. Tiny sounds snuffled out from between her tightly closed lips, and snot was running down her cheeks. It felt good, but it was over too quickly. When Rafe had finished, he yanked his jeans back up without buttoning them, staring down at the naked woman writhing in the dirt. As he looked at her, he remembered the wolf in the puzzle, frozen forever in the moment of attack. Time for him seemed to slow down and finally stop, and he reveled in the feeling of eternal invincibility as he stood over his victim, who probably could have got up and run away, but of course wouldn't think of doing that. She was a good little gazelle who would lie there and take what was coming to her. At last, almost as an afterthought, he pulled a gutting knife from his boot and began slicing, starting at her throat so she would be immediately silenced. Her eyes were still huge with surprise and confusion, not understanding how this nice man who had pulled up at the bus stop and asked her for a cigarette could be doing such a thing, how he could be such an efficient predator. Then the blood sprayed, and her mouth gaped open once, then twice, like a fish on a dock, gasping for air. Her dark eyes seemed to dim, and then her body rattled and lay still. Rafe barely noticed as the spark left. He was fully occupied with the grim task of tearing her limb from limb, inserting the knife beneath the muscle tissue and rending it asunder, taking pleasure in the mere fact of mutilation, an unnecessary but satisfying endeavor. He worked more quickly than usual, so the cuts were sloppier, more ragged, much bloodier. This pleased him, and he made a mental note of the fact for future hunts. When he had finished, the woman was little more than a scattered jigsaw of pulpy flesh, only her face intact, her eyes half-lidded and staring. Rafe retrieved his branding iron and a small cigarette lighter from the pocket of his coat. Then, with a flourish, he pressed the heated paw print into a tiny square of exposed skin. He held it there for a moment, listening to the sizzle and savoring the aroma, before pulling the brand away, forcefully, as it tended to stick a little. That done, Rafe took a deep breath, drawing the damp early morning air into his lungs. He looked down at himself and wasn't surprised to see that his clothes were spattered with blood. That was always the way of the predator. He took one last longing glimpse at the corpse at his feet, then stripped down to his boxer shorts, balling up his bloody clothes into a wad small enough to fit between his two fists. He could hear traffic rushing past on the highway to the left and above him, but he knew no one would be able to see him from that distance. He tiptoed out of the woods and slithered back through the fence, keeping his body low so that it was partially concealed behind a dumpster. In this way, he made it back to his car without being seen. Once there, the bloody clothes went into a plastic grocery bag in the back seat. He had brought a clean shirt and jeans, the way he always did on such excursions. He'd always assumed that if Mary were to ever suspect he was up to something, it would likely be because of all the clothes he went through. He had to smile at that. The smile faded as he started the engine and slowly made his way back to the highway. He still had to take care of this second person, and even though the worst of his hunger had been sated, his anger at being found out was still raw and seething. He glanced at his watch and saw that it was only 7:30. It would only take 20 minutes or so to get downtown, even in heavy rush hour traffic. He would be waiting for that Egyptian bastard when he came into work, that was certain. Rafe barely remembered the drive to the shop, and before he knew it, he was pulling up to the curb in front of the parking meter, checking to see if his gun was tucked into the waistband of his pants. It occurred to him then that Sekhem might have copies of the pictures, and that if Rafe branded the guy after he killed him, then the cops might tie the other murders to him. Mentally patting himself on the back for being so clever, he left his branding iron in the glove compartment. Still, though, he might burn the store down afterwards, just in case there was any other evidence lying around. The streets were jammed with people today, since it was Monday, and Rafe did his best to blend in with the crowd. For a moment, he became disoriented, not remembering where the store was or what the number above the door had been. There hadn't been a sign or a business name, of that he was sure. Tamping down panic, Rafe cruised down the street, peering left and right from behind his dark sunglasses. Across the street, he could see that burger joint where he'd stopped yesterday, so the shop must be right around there. A darkened, narrow glass door with a thin film of dust coating it from inside, and no identifying marks other than a peeling gold 435 stuck in the middle of the transom. Tensing every muscle in his body and poising one hand towards his back where the pistol was, Rafe grabbed the metal door handle and pushed his way inside. It was just like when he had drunk the tea, only this time he was sure he hadn't had any. As soon as he walked into the shop, he was blind. The darkness around him was so complete that he couldn't even be sure where the door he had just entered through was in relation to himself. He whipped his sunglasses off and tucked them away. It made no difference. The smell was stronger too, that chemical smell, and Rafe could picture the endless shelves with their murky bottles, containing Christ knew what. The panic was rising again, but he couldn't let it get the better of him, not now. He placed his hand on the butt of the gun, and that calmed him somewhat. Pulling it out and pointing it at the nothingness before him calmed him even more. "I've got a gun, you son of a bitch," he hissed into the darkness, glad that his voice didn't tremble. "You'd better come out if you don't want me to burn this whole fucking place down." He thought he heard a rustling, and he quickly snapped toward it, poking the gun toward the sound. "I can hear you." He risked a few steps forward, almost expecting to feel arms reaching out to grab him, or a blunt object crashing into his head. Nothing of the sort happened, so he risked a few more steps. "Come out," I said. His voice echoed back to him, sounding strange and distorted. "Rafe." The sound of his name was so soft that he couldn't quite be sure he'd actually heard it. The darkness seemed to be seeping into his lungs, burning them with the scent of spices and sulfur. He stopped where he was, and a moment later there was a blaze of light directly in front of him, so sudden that he threw his hands up in front of his face, almost dropping the gun in the process. It seemed like there were voices all around him now, coming from every direction. He slowly moved his hands and blinked in the light, straining to see what was happening. The shop, as he remembered it, was gone. There was no counter, and no apothecary shelves with rows of old medicines. The space, in fact, appeared to have swelled to 100 times its previous size, the ceiling cavernous, the walls so far from him that they were barely visible, even in the ample light provided by the ring of blazing torches that now illuminated the space. His hands had dropped to his sides as he stared around the space in awe. The walls were covered in scratches and letters. A longer look revealed them to be hieroglyphics. At 4 equal points around him, he noticed massive stone columns decorated with the same designs, stretching upward seemingly forever. The torches ahead of him flanked a huge stone table or sarcophagus, on which rested the small weighing scales he had noticed on the shop's counter the day before. "What the fuck?" Rafe thought, still frightened but more confused than anything. I'm in a goddamn Egyptian tomb. Rafe. He was sure he heard his name this time, and he snapped his gun back up, aiming at the spot directly in front of him. Who's there? Who indeed? Sekhem emerged from the darkness, his black eyes glittering in the firelight. His skin looked like polished mahogany. He was naked from head to toe. What the hell is going on here? Rafe's gun hand had begun to shake, and he tried to steady it. Shoot him, some part of his mind screamed, but he couldn't make himself do it. What do you want from me? I gave you a second chance, didn't I? Sekhem had slithered up behind the sarcophagus and was standing there with his shoulders back, very straight, his chin raised. He looked regal and deadly. For what? What are you talking about? Rafe glanced left and right and saw that many other people had appeared from the shadows, mocha-skinned and naked, watching him with stern expressions. As the candlelight flickered on their taut bodies, Rafe could swear that he saw them change, saw forms squirming beneath the human ones. It was this that finally caused the terror that had been building inside him to take over, and he whirled around and began firing wildly into the crowd. The gunshots ricocheted off the stone walls with high-pitched whines, but none of the assembled throng even appeared to notice them. At last, the hammer clicked on an empty chamber, and he was left standing there, his nostrils full of the smell of cordite, his finger throbbing. Sekhem was still regarding him mildly, as if nothing had happened. "Step forward, please," he said. His tone was pleasant, but there was a definite note of threat beneath it. Rafe dropped the useless gun at his feet. "Not until you tell me what's happening here." It was foolish, he knew, to defy them. He was outnumbered, and now unarmed. But he couldn't become the prey, not without a fight. "What's happening, Mr. Latorno, is your judgment." Sekhem placed a long finger on one of the scales, pushing it downward, causing the other balance to rise. He did this several times, stretching out the suspense, until Rafe was almost driven mad. "Please step forward, it will be quicker." Rafe's whole body trembled. The shadows around him seemed to be growing deeper, closer, as though the people around him were pressing in for the kill. He didn't want to look at them, the memory of their flickering forms still vivid in his imagination, but he couldn't stop himself. And then his trembling ramped up to screaming, because the people had changed. There was no longer any question of optical illusion. The woman closest to him had transformed into a massive black cat, fur shining and sleek, and just to the side of her was a man-sized falcon with a curving beak and round staring eyes. Farther back, he also thought he spotted a monstrous reptilian thing with rippling green scales, and an enormous insect with six clicking legs. Rafe scrabbled across the stone floor of the tomb, wanting to run for the exit but no longer seeing the way he had come in. Every other route of egress was blocked by one of the hideous creatures, bearing down on him with fur and feathers and scales, all glimmering and wicked. There was nowhere for him to run but toward Sekhem, toward the sarcophagus. As he reached it, Rafe went sprawling, curling up against the base of the coffin and putting his arms up to protect his face. "Sekhem, make them stop." And for a moment they did stop, standing in a circle before him like the statues he'd seen in the Egyptian galleries at the British Museum long ago. Rafe could see now that the animals were all adorned with gold and jewels. The cat had gold hoops dangling from her ears. The falcon sported a large neck plate that appeared to be made of opal and turquoise. He heard footsteps whispering across the floor to his left, and he looked up to see Sekhem looming over him, an expression of complete tranquility wreathing his features. He bent down, liquidly, and forced Rafe to his feet, seemingly with no effort at all. "It is proper to show dignity before your judge," he said, and although his voice was quiet, it seemed to boom and echo all around the decorated chamber. Rafe's breath was ragged, and he kept his eyes focused on Sekhem's. Perhaps if the man felt some pity for him, he might be able to get out of this mess. "Look, I'm sorry," he said, not really sure what he was apologizing for, but figuring it was a good way to start. "I'm a bad person, I know that. I can try to be better. I can try to stop it." He was babbling, he knew, and his excuses sounded woefully lame, but he was desperate. Already the memory of the kill this morning had faded from triumph into something that felt like shame. "Look at me and know me," said Sekhem, pulling himself up to his full height, which was considerably taller than Rafe. As the torchlight played across the man's face, Rafe could just see something beneath, a hint of black, a snarl of white canines. As he watched, Sekhem's human features seemed to melt into the dimness. His skin darkened from coffee to polished ebony, and fur rippled forth from some unseen source. His ears began to lengthen, pointing straight up like those of a Doberman, and his face likewise molded forward, forming a long snout. The deep liquid eyes were the only things that remained the same, and they stared at him with complete detachment. Rafe wanted to turn away but couldn't, wanted to move but didn't dare. The face of a black dog, a jackal, hung before him in the darkness. There was a whisper in the crowd, and the shadowed forms pressed closer, animal eyes twinkling in the light from the torches. Sekhem lowered his head a little, as if in deference. "Rafe G. Latorno," he intoned, though his black lips didn't move at all. "You stand accused of many willful acts of murder against your own kind, and of taking upon yourself the trappings of a race you lay no claim to. What do you have to say for yourself on this matter?" Rafe could almost hear his knees knocking together. "I know I've done some bad things. I don't deny it, okay? I'll turn myself into the police." Suddenly, this seemed like the best idea he had ever had, and he grasped at it with fervor. "Would that make it better? I'll tell the police everything." Rafe turned his sweaty face to the others, seeking affirmation, or at the very least, pity. "You admit the murders you have committed?" Sekhem asked. "Yes, yes, I did them all. I enjoyed them even. Please let me go. I swear I'll do what I said." His voice was a high-pitched wail, and he would have been disgusted at the sound of it if he hadn't been more terrified than he'd ever been in his life. "And what of the other charge?" Sekhem's eyes had not blinked since his transformation, giving him the appearance of a disturbingly lifelike wax figure. "Other charge? I don't..." "You purposely made your killings appear as animal killings, and allowed yourself to be tagged as the Wolfman and the Jackal in the media. Is this not so?" "Yeah, I did that, I guess. But why?" Sekhem actually moved then, shaking his head a little, and it was as though a sculpture had come to life. "It is a grave transgression to impersonate one of our kind. In fact, it was your mimicry that alerted us to your activities." "Your kind?" Rafe looked wildly at the gathered multitude, who were all staring at him with glassy, hungry gazes. "Who exactly are all you people?" "Come now, Mr. Latorno, you surprise me. A cold-blooded murderer and pretender you may be, but I don't believe you're as ignorant as all that." Every word Sekhem spoke was stern, but calm, with no trace of anger. "Who do we appear to be, Mr. Latorno?" "Your..." He looked into Sekhem's eyes, then found he couldn't bear the castigation he read there. Even the faraway stares of the others were becoming too much to take. He hesitated to say the words. "Your Egyptian gods," he finally managed, looking down at his hands and mumbling. "That is correct. I, as you may have guessed, am known as Sekhem Mpet, Anpu, Whip, Yenpo, or by many other names, the most common of which is Anubis, and you may also recognize some of my compatriots, Bast the Cat, Horus the Falcon, Sobek the Crocodile, Kepri the Scarab, Wajet the Serpent." He gestured to each of the animals in turn, then swept his arm around to encompass the entire assemblage. "We've all gathered here to witness your judgment." "You can't do this." The sarcophagus was hard and cold on the skin of Rafe's back. The torches blazed merrily around him, but he still felt as though he was freezing from the inside out. "What can I do to..." Sekhem made a sound that might have been a sigh. "I think that I've been more than fair in my dealings with you, Mr. Latorno. I gave you a warning, did I not? The feather of Maat, do you remember?" Rafe thought now of the feather, tucked away in its gold box in his desk, back in a house he would probably never see again. He pictured Mary finding it after he was long gone and wondering what it was. "But I didn't know," he cried. "I didn't know what it meant. You can't possibly..." "Did I not tell you that it was a second chance?" "But I didn't understand. Please." The very act of begging made him almost sick with self-loathing. But what could he do now? He couldn't escape. There were far too many of them. His gun was empty and far out of reach regardless. Then he remembered the gutting knife. Had he tucked it back into his boot when he'd changed clothes back at the motel? Of course he had. He always put it back in its place. He had just forgotten about it in all the excitement. The bigger issue was, would it do any good? The bullets hadn't seemed to upset anyone, though whether he had actually hit a single person was an open question. "They're going to kill me anyway," the predator's voice in his mind whispered. "Better to go down fighting than let them tear me open like a helpless bunny rabbit." Sekhem, Anubis, was still standing there, huge as a tree trunk, his black fur shimmering. Rafe glanced up at him, then began blubbering, tucking his chin into his chest, begging for his life in the most pitiful tone he could muster. He started to crumple to the floor, as if the anguish was too much for him to bear any longer, and as he lowered himself, he felt around his pant leg with one hand, trying to make the motion look accidental. Where was the handle? For a moment he couldn't feel it, and his anguish really did threaten to crush him, but then his fingers brushed across something hard, and he seized upon it with all the strength he possessed. The plaintive wail emerging from his throat became a war whoop as he grabbed the knife and pulled it free, charging forward at the same moment, slinging the blade upward toward the statuesque Anubis. He felt the blade contacting with something much harder than flesh, and then his whole body was lifted off the ground by one arm, the arm that held the knife. He felt a vice-like pressure on his wrist, and he screamed as the bones gnashed together. His fingers were pried apart, the knife, the only hope of his salvation, snatched away as though it was a toy and he a naughty child. Rafe was dropped to the ground with a shattering thud, then yanked to his feet again. When he came eye to eye with Anubis, the jackal face was ablaze with hatred, the white fangs bared and dripping foam. "You dare defy me," he roared, hauling Rafe so close that he could smell the creature's breath, an overpowering stew of blood and sulfur. "The time for discussion is over. Your judgment will commence." The jackal let go of Rafe, letting him fall bonelessly to the floor before the sarcophagus. The others, Bast, Horus, Wadjet, crept ever closer, their animal faces almost appearing to smile. Anubis rounded the stone again, and Rafe could no longer see him. A moment later, though, he heard a booming voice. "Rise, Rafe G. Latorno." Rafe didn't think he could rise. His body felt battered, and he was sure at least one of his ankles was broken. But then he saw the other creatures bearing down on him, their claws outstretched, and the thought of them touching him was enough to make him struggle to his feet, wincing at the agony that shot up his legs. "Don't worry about the pain," his inner voice told him helpfully. "You won't have to endure it much longer." At last, he stood before the sarcophagus and faced Anubis, managing to look the jackal in the eye. The creature's anger seemed to have dissipated somewhat, though his mouth was still open a little, his teeth still glittering. He said nothing more, but placed one paw-like hand on the small scale in front of him, pushing it toward Rafe a few inches. Then he gave a short howling sound, a signal of some sort, and another man-sized black jackal, walking on its two hind legs, emerged from the crowd. In its arms it held a red silk cushion, and in the center of the cushion lay a tiny ivory feather. The other jackal bowed before Anubis, who bowed his own head in return, then plucked the feather reverently from its bed. "Thank you, Wepwawet," Anubis said. Wepwawet set the cushion upon the floor next to the sarcophagus and sat behind it, settling on his haunches the way a dog would, his ears pricked and alert. Anubis held the feather up, letting the firelight play upon its contours. It seemed to glow in his hands, and there was a general sigh from the assembled creatures. The jackal then brought the feather down even with his face. "The feather of Maat," he intoned, showing it to Rafe. Rafe, uncertain what he was supposed to be doing, simply looked at the feather and nodded his approval. His stomach was twisting into knots. Moving slowly with the enormity of ritual, Anubis placed the feather lovingly on one of the balances. It lay there, white and glowing, its wispy filaments stirred by an unseen breeze. The scale hardly registered its weight at all. Now the jackal's gaze fell upon Rafe again. "Judgment," he said. "We must see how you measure up in comparison." Rafe looked doubtfully at the feather, trying to remember what this ritual entailed. He knew he'd read something about it somewhere. "What will happen to me if I don't measure up?" There was a long silence. Even the whispering creatures behind him seemed to have gone quiet. At last, Anubis made a sound that might have been a laugh. "Something far worse than you have endured today, I can assure you." With that, he raised one massive ebony arm, pointing his strange clawed fingers toward the ceiling. Then his arm shot forward. A loud gasp emerged from all the spectators. Rafe felt nothing at first, and then there was a slight pressure in his chest, something like he'd felt a few times when he'd overdone it at the gym. Scowling, he looked down at himself. Anubis's arm was sprouting out of Reef's breastbone. Confused, he peered up at the jackal, his mouth opening to ask what had happened, and then the pain hit him full force, obliterating all thought. He found that he couldn't scream, couldn't even catch his breath. His mouth flopped open and closed. The torches around him began to take on strange, torturous shapes, illuminating the warped faces of the animals that swam in and out of his vision. "I'm dying," he thought, and it didn't seem such a terrible thing to be happening to him, all things considered. He didn't die, though, and as he watched, Anubis pulled his hand back toward himself. The fur was matted with blood, and the clawed hand was closed around a scarlet lump of meat that appeared to be pulsing. "That's my heart," Rafe thought, and he laughed out loud. He looked down at himself and saw a gaping wound in the middle of his chest, ringed by gobbets of torn flesh, just like one of the girls in the pictures. The memory of his victims, all of which he had loved in his own special way, made him feel exultant and morose all at once. "I'll never finish that puzzle now," he thought bitterly, apropos of nothing, and found that he felt like crying. The pressure in his chest was fading, and as he watched, he could see that the flesh was mending itself, stitching back over the wound, closing over his hollow ribcage. After a few moments, the hole was gone, as if it had never been there, the shirt over it perfect and buttoned and bloodless. Rafe G. Latorno. Rafe looked up at the sound of his name. Anubis was still clutching the heart in one hand. It dripped dark blood onto the stone surface of the sarcophagus, his gaze fixed on Rafe. The moment of truth, as they say. He placed the heart upon the other balance, opposite the feather. The balance didn't move. There was a stirring in the crowd that soon grew to deafening proportions. Even Anubis appeared stunned, his hand frozen in midair. "It can't be," he whispered. Wepwawet got to his feet, swiveling his dog-like head back and forth as though looking for a traitor in their midst. Rafe couldn't help but stare at his red, still-beating heart, lying there on the scale as if it weighed nothing at all. The feather fluttered opposite, seemingly unconcerned. "Does this mean I can go?" There was more shouting among the assembled, and finally Anubis raised his arm for quiet. The voices ceased immediately. "I don't understand what's happened here." He looked up at Rafe, as if expecting an explanation. "This is impossible." Slowly, Rafe began feeling like himself again, feeling like the predator was again coming to the fore. He gestured to the scale in front of him. "Well, there it is. Maybe not as impossible as you thought." "Perhaps we could just..." began Wepwawet. "Silence!" roared Anubis. Wepwawet blanched and dropped to the floor, curling up next to the cushion again, his pointy ears drooping. "The ritual is very clear," the jackal said in a lower voice. "He must go to the kingdom of the dead." "But how can he?" purred Bast, who slinked forward on her large black paws. "After what he's done, the crimes he's committed." "I don't understand it either," Anubis shot back, clearly irritated. "But the feather of Maat does not lie." "Wait a minute," said Rafe, holding up both hands, almost forgetting that his heart had been extricated and now sat like a bloodied pot roast on the scale between them. "You mean I have to go to the kingdom of the dead anyway, even after I pass the test or whatever?" "You didn't think we were actually going to let you live, did you?" Anubis said with stinging sarcasm. "He can't go to the kingdom of the dead," said Horus, clicking his beak with something like indignation. "It is only for pure souls. His very presence will corrupt the entire place." "Yes, I'm aware of that, thank you." Anubis's temper was clearly rising again. Rafe thought he saw steam curling from his black nostrils. "Might I suggest something?" Rafe's empty chest was filling with something like triumph, seeing that he could conceivably take the upper hand. "A deal, in other words?" Bast made a hissing sound, but Anubis simply looked at him. "A deal?" "Yeah. I don't pretend to know much about what's going on, but it's pretty obvious I'm giving you a big headache." Anubis didn't answer, but Rafe thought he saw the creature nod his head almost imperceptibly. "Right, well, here's the thing. You guys don't want me to go to the kingdom of the dead because I'm so evil I'll mess it up. You also can't send me, well, wherever you were going to send me when you thought my heart would be heavier than your feather there. Your version of hell, I'm guessing. And as it happens, I didn't really want to go to either place." Get to the point, human, Horace growled. So what I'm thinking, Rafe continued, his voice taking on a chatty tone, since it's clear you won't just let me go and forget all about me, is that you make me one of you guys. You know, half-animal, godlike shapeshifter, the whole shebang. The outraged voices immediately swelled into a cacophony, and this time Anubis had difficulty quieting everyone down. Once he considered Rafe with a look in his eyes that might have been grudging respect. I'm not entirely sure you know what you're asking, the jackal said. It can't be any worse than any of the other things you were going to do to me, right? Rafe managed a smile, his confidence returning. Wepwawet made a sound that might have been a laugh at this last pronouncement, but shut up when Anubis shot him a dirty look. What you say is true, Rafe G. Latorno, the jackal said thoughtfully. You're not seriously considering his offer. The fur on Bast's back was spiked straight out, and her teeth were bared. It would neatly solve the present dilemma, Anubis said. It would solve nothing, said Khepri, pushing to the fore with his segmented legs. His speech was punctuated with buzzes and clicks. We would still be forced to put up with him, for an eternity no less. Many of the others murmured their agreement. Oh, come on, Rafe said, sweeping his gaze around. I'm not such a bad guy. They all stared at him, their black animal eyes blazing. The fact that you are such a bad guy is why we are in this mess to begin with, Anubis said with a sigh. Horace, what do you advise? The falcon bowed his head. Personally, I think it's preferable to him polluting the kingdom of the dead. I must say the prospect of having to interact with him on a daily basis is not a pleasant one. But the decision lies with you. You're the guardian. Indeed, I am. The jackal seemed resigned. He took one last look down at the scale, that impossible balance of feather and heavy heart, then fixed his gaze on Rafe. Very well. Your wish is granted. All right. He couldn't help gloating, turning his head to look at the others, silently rubbing his victory in their faces. Every one of them looked as though they'd like to murder him on the spot, but he knew they wouldn't hurt him, not now. He turned back to Anubis. Do I get to pick what animal to be? The jackal looked as pained as an animal's face could possibly look. If you must, he said. Smiling, Rafe considered his options, although he knew immediately what his choice would be. How could it be otherwise? Thinking of the puzzle he would never finish, the wolf's paw branding iron he carried in his jacket, he said, I'd like to be a wolf. Anubis nodded. I figured as much, he said. Rafe pointed to his heart, still congealing in its puddle of blood. Do I get that back? No, you will no longer need it. As if to reinforce his statement, the jackal picked up the heart and took a massive bite, chewing it almost reverently before tossing the remains to Wepwawet, who leaped after the meat with feverish rapture. The wet sounds of the animal eating echoed around the walls of the tomb. And now, Anubis said, raising his arms again, you become as we are. Rafe closed his eyes and waited, thinking of the endless years of prey before him, thinking of the mark he would leave on every one with his own clawed hand.